It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
There's one thing that was missing in his speech. It's something that's been missing from a lot of conservatives I see writing about the election. Something else that Mitch McConnell and the institutional Republican Party and all the staffers and the lawyers and the factotums and the functionaries and the people sitting in the White House watching this right now, perhaps, the people on Capitol Hill who have TV on right now and the right-wing press who've been supporting and spinning for this president and the people who work for Donald Trump himself and all of his apologists who like to post as independent thinkers, too clever by half, removed from it all, something that every last one of them have done to together, other than Supreme Court justices, which cannot be reversed. And that is they have participated in a project that has led to the deaths of probably 100,000 Americans who didn't have to die. Congratulations. You got that done, too. That also can't be reversed. They can't come back. We can't undo that. That's the other accomplishment here, Judge Barrett. They traded one for the other. They traded those lies for this justice. And they had a party about it in the Rose Garden, too, now. We can't do anything about the lies we've lost or about Amy Coney Barrett being on Supreme Court. She's going to be now. So all we can do is take that rage and channel it, rise up together as a country to kick them out of power and begin some work towards repairing what they've broken and mourning those we've lost.
So because Amy Coney Barrett was confirmed Monday, and because the government spent time, you know, recruiting her, taking her through the process. That cost 100,000 lives at least, according to MSNBC's Chris Hayes. Amy Coney Barrett, are you listening? You're responsible for all these lives that were lost. That's how irrational it's getting. In fact, Morning Joe said the same thing. This must be a talking point that has been issued to the leftist press. Amy Coney Barrett I could go ahead and say that CNN and MSNBC did not even air coverage of Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation vote. And as a matter of fact, when during the ceremony on Monday, this is what CNN ran underneath. Trump Supreme Court nominee about to be sworn in at White House at another potential super spreader event. So it's always all about COVID. It's all about COVID. And Amy Coney Barrett is now responsible for probably 100,000 deaths. And no kidding, that is what they're saying. It's just a pretty amazing. Sandy Rios, by the way, thanks for joining me this morning. Well, guess what? There's lots of news, and I have a lot to tell you, so I'm going to jump right in here. Nancy Pelosi is now getting a little bit more loose with her lips about potentially packing the court, maybe other creative ideas. This was an interview that she did just yesterday. Let's listen.
Checks and balances could be reasserted. Abraham Lincoln expanded the size of the court. FDR famously attempted to when the New Deal was sort of breaking on the shoals of that conservative court until it sort of changed its jurisprudence. Are you, as the Speaker of the House, are you open to efforts to do that in the future?
Well, I think that Joe Biden has given us a good path. He's going to have something that people can understand why this is important. And I like what something that Brian said about not just the Supreme Court, but the other courts. It was in 1876, there were 9 justices on the court. Our population has grown enormously since then. Should we expand the court? Well, let's take a look and see.
Right.
But and that relates to the 9 district courts. Maybe we need more district courts as well. And one other thing we need for these justices to disclose their holdings. Why should all the rest of us have to disclose our holdings? And that is appropriate, but not if you're a justice of the Supreme Court.
All right, that's enough. She goes, that's another issue. I just wanted you to hear her say that
one branch.
You can pull that down, Devin. I just want you to hear her say that she's talking now about we have a larger population now. So we, shouldn't we have a larger court? And of course, this is, let me just explain, because it's important that you understand this. The legislative branch of our government is based on population. We get represented. We have no taxation without representation. We have representatives, and they are based on how states are populated. And we have more, you know, fully populated, large population states have large delegations of congressmen. That's the way that works in the Senate. Works similarly, but that's the legislative branch. The judicial branch is a completely separate branch. It has nothing to do with that. And it doesn't take more people to decide decisions about law and the Constitution. It takes a finite, it doesn't take a room full of people now to make these decisions. And the reason why the courts are appointed, the judges are appointed, is so that they are apolitical. They are not subject to the whims of the people. So the idea of the founding fathers was that they could then make independent decisions, not worried that if they decide this or that, they're going to be thrown off the court. And so we have an independent judiciary. That's what we call it. But so what the Democrats are talking about doing is, packing the court, adding after we've had for 150 years. And Abraham Lincoln, by the way, did not stack the court. That's not true. Kamala Harris said that in a debate, and it's just not true. No one has packed the court. Franklin Roosevelt tried to. And by packing, we mean adding people to the court who agree with you so that you can get the outcome that you want. So let's say anyone could do that. If a court is now, it's 6-3, conservative technically, if you can call John Roberts a conservative, if you don't like that configuration and the Democrats take over, what they plan to do is like maybe they'll add like, I don't know, 7 judges or something, you know, so that, and 7 liberal judges, because they intend to take back the Senate and hold on to the House and have the presidency. And so they can just have everything their way with no barriers. And so that's the danger here. Well, Amy Coney Barrett, of course, took her place in the court yesterday. And I want to, this is really important, because Daily Caller did a piece about what the first cases are that she'll be hearing. And I want to share that with you, because I think you should know. The first one coming up, is a very interesting. It's a Catholic Social Services Agency that runs foster care, and that's in Philadelphia. You know, Philadelphia is having lots of problems this morning, and I can't diverge on that. Watch the news. Lots of rioting and looting because of a black man wielding a knife coming at police. He was shot by the police, and now they're stealing from the stores. And figure that out. But that's what's happening in Philadelphia. So the Catholic Social Services was running a foster care service, and they refused to work with same-sex couples because you know why. It's against their faith, against their beliefs, it's against biblical beliefs. And so they have filed a suit against the city. Sorry, they're still working on the roof above me, and they've chosen just this moment to hammer. Anyway, I hope you can still hear me. So the Catholic Social Services has filed suit, and it's gone all the way up to the Supreme Court. So that's the first case that's going to come to the Supreme Court now that Barrett has been sworn into the court. By the way, we know that Amy Coney Barrett served 3 years on the board of a private Christian school that effectively barred admission to children of same-sex parents and made it plain that openly gay and lesbian teachers weren't welcome in the classroom. That's the way the Associated Press words it. The other one that she is going to be hearing is the big one that the Democrats on the committee who were so against her and they lined up those huge pictures was this challenge to the Affordable Care Act. Now, I could tell you that I know who started this. This was Ken Cuccinelli when he was Attorney General in Virginia, and it was a challenge to Obamacare. Remember when John Roberts decided that the law said if you didn't have insurance, you had to pay a fine. And that really wasn't constitutional. So John Roberts decided to call it a tax. He had no right to do that. And Amy Coney Barrett really called him out on that and said, that's not a tax. And he had to, you know, bend over backwards to keep the law in place to decide it was constitutional. That's what John Roberts, one of the first things he did, where many of us felt like we'd been stabbed in the back by who was supposed to be a conservative justice. So that case, the whole issue of whether indeed the individual mandate that forcing you to have insurance, if that's been done away with under the Trump administration. But now because the individual mandate is no longer in place, it sounds like the whole law, the argument is that the whole law has to be thrown out because there's nothing the bottom line, the foundation of it has been done away with. So that's what she's going to be hearing along with the other eight justices. And then the next one is a ballot extension case. And this, remember I told you Pennsylvania, the Supreme Court just, with John Roberts' help, decided to let Pennsylvania continue to count ballots 3 days after Election Day, or allow mail-in ballots to come in 3 days after the Election Day. That was Friday. So the Supreme Court did not change the lower court's decision, but now this is news to me this morning. But it looks like they want to take that back to the court, and they're asking for an expedited hearing on that. And if the Supreme Court says that mail-in ballots cannot be held past the election date, if that's the ruling, that's going to affect all the other states that are allowing mail-in ballots to be sent past the deadline. So that's a huge case. And then there's another challenge to Roe versus Wade. That's coming right up. It's coming out of Mississippi. So you can see, can you not? You can see why the left is apoplectic over Amy Coney Barrett. And we don't know how she's going to rule. We have no idea. I think she will absolutely watch the Constitution and do her job. She's made that very plain. I take her at her word. But that doesn't mean she's going to bring her personal inclinations into it, and we might not get the outcome that we would like, those of us that are that have very strong conservative convictions, because she's making the decision based on the law. So we'll see what happens with those things. All right, so now, of course, Amy Coney Barrett probably doesn't realize she's responsible for the deaths of 100,000 more Americans because of her confirmation. But let's see, it could be worse, because you could live in New Zealand. I want you to hear what New Zealand is. They've gone off the Trevor Loudon, a good friend of mine who's from New Zealand, who's been our guest a number of times. Come in. Oh, they're hammering. Sorry. So Trevor Loudon has told me for years how New Zealand has become so influenced by the communists, and that's just some backdrop on this. Well, this is the New Zealand health minister making an announcement yesterday in regard to COVID, because they're going COVID crazy over there. This is clip six.
National response to this new outbreak. I am now directing medical officers of health that all cases, confirmed cases, are to be managed in a quarantine facility. Now, this is different to how positive cases were managed when we were last at levels 4 and indeed 3, and shows how serious we are about limiting any risk of ongoing transmission, even in self-isolation and including to others in the household. This will apply to any cases and also close family members who might be at risk as appropriate. A reminder, these facilities have been set up specifically and have excellent processes and resources in place to look after people with COVID-19, including health staff on site at all times.
All right, I'm going to interrupt because we're running out of time. So they're setting up quarantine facilities. So if you test positive for COVID, they have a wonderful place for you. They're set up beautifully. And not to be outdone, the Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, I think somebody captured this off of a television screen. Listen to what she says, clip seven.
If someone refuses in our facilities to be tested, they have to keep staying. So they won't be able to leave after 14 days. They have to stay on for another 14 days. So it's a pretty good incentive. You either get your tests done and make sure you're cleared, or we will keep you in a facility longer. So I think most people will look at that and say, I'll take the test. I've got a number of questions about people refuse, you know, what do we do if someone refuses to be tested? Well, they can't now. If someone refuses in our facilities to be tested, they have to keep staying. So they won't be able to leave after 14 days. They have to stay on for another 14 days. So it's a pretty good incentive. You either get your tests done and make sure you're cleared, or we will keep you in a facility longer.
That's amazing. That is a democracy for you. That's New Zealand. That's how it happens when the left takes over, and the left has taken over. And when you see her face saying that, you will not be allowed to leave if you go to this facility and you refuse testing. You will not be allowed to leave. We will force you to stay. Taking people out of their homes, putting them in quarantine facilities. Don't think it can't happen here. Don't think the left wouldn't do that in a heartbeat. Ask the Orthodox Jews in New York City how they're being harassed because they're a minority population that does not comport well with the governor or the mayor of New York. They will target us. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Okay, some good news during a challenging time for everybody, and this could really help. You may know hundreds of thousands of people have already made the switch to MediShare, which is the affordable alternative to health insurance. And with so many people looking at how they pay for healthcare right now, seeing premiums going up or the cost of COBRA plans, MediShare has a special offer and a lot of people are taking advantage of it. Simply apply by October 30th and they will waive your new member fee. That's $170 savings. And of course, that's just a start. The typical family saves $500 a month after making the switch. MediShare is a Christian community that has shared over $4 billion in medical bills, and it's worked beautifully for decades. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to get your additional savings. Here it is. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Well, these are certainly tough, tough times, aren't they? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, I'm grateful that God has given Bible League a platform for more than 8 decades to address the other pandemic, and that's the shortage of Bibles all over the world in places like Asia, Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. In fact, at Bible League, we determined that as few as 1 Christian in 10 has a Bible. What's that mean? That during this pandemic, many evangelical Christians elsewhere in the world cannot open their Bible and be reminded of God's promises, like 1 Peter 5:7, cast your cares on Him, for He cares for you. But you know, during this time of sheltering in place, we can shelter in grace. Learn how you can be a blessing to believers around the world praying for a Bible by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org, or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. The ladies of Kappa Delta at Rhodes College in Memphis are in quite a tizzy. One of their own just became a Supreme Court Justice, Amy Coney Barrett. The sorority posted a message noting her significant accomplishment. Soon after, they deleted that post and apologized. Kappa Delta somehow managed to trigger a bunch of leftists at the college. They apologized, says they were deeply sorry for writing such a hurtful message. The sorority promised to begin a journey to focus on diversity and inclusion. And the first step is apparently to exclude brilliant pro-life, pro-family Christian women. Somebody needs to tell the precious little snowflakes at Rhodes College that sometimes life isn't fair. Sometimes you don't always get what you want. You also might want to give them a cookie and a Banky in case they get triggered. Be sure to download my free podcast. Listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern, streaming online at toddstarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I knew whenever I was graduating high school and entering college that I wanted to obtain my degree and start a career before starting a family. Having access to birth control and safe reproductive health care was imperative in making that true for me. So considering the new Supreme Court nomination of Amy Coney Barrett, what are your particular plans to protect women's reproductive rights in the U.S.?
Number one, we don't know exactly what she will do, although the expectation is that she may very well move to overrule Roe. But the only responsible response to that would be to pass legislation making Roe the law of the land. That's what I would do.
Sandy Rios back with you. That is the candidate for president, former Vice President Joe Biden, the Catholic who's been sort of pro-life. We've thought all these years pro-life, right? Sort of voting, you know, in favor of Planned Parenthood all the while, telling us that privately he's pro-life. Well, there's a story this morning in the Catholic Register that's written by a friend of ours, and I've asked him to join us. Paul Kinger, of course, is a professor of political science at Grove City College. He's the author of The Devil and Karl Marx, and you know you hear him at this mic pretty often because I think the world of him. And he's written this article that I want you to know about, at least the content of it, When Joe Biden Saved Roe versus Wade. Paul, good morning, and thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Sandy. Good to be with you.
All right, so you have a little insight. If I found it fascinating. I don't know if people know this story. You say, basically, this isn't the first time that Joe Biden has saved Roe versus Wade. So what happened? How do we know this?
Yeah. So really, it's a quite remarkable story, and I know this only because I'm probably the only person, you know, listening right now or speaking right now on your show who actually read Warren Rudman's memoirs of all things. But Warren Rudman was the Republican senator from New Hampshire, very much a kind of Rockefeller Republican. You know, the rhino, we'd probably call him today, pro-choice on the abortion issue. And I read this, boy, over 10 years ago. Over 10 years ago. But he talks about the date was June 29th, 1992, and he's at the Amtrak station in Wilmington, Delaware. And he looks down the platform, and he sees Joe Biden. And he says, you know, at first I didn't see him, then I spotted him waving at me from way down the platform. And these two men, they see each other, and this is no exaggeration. This sounds like some sort of weird romance. They start running to each other, right? They dash into each other's arms. They start hugging, embracing, jumping up and down, crying tears of joy. And why? Well, as Rudman put it in his memoirs, Joe had agonized over his vote for David. Meanwhile, you're thinking, David, right? I knew he must be thrilled. We started running through the crowd toward each other. Then we met, we embraced, laughing and crying. David, who's the third man here in this political tryst, was just as David Souter. And he had been the Bush nominee for the Supreme Court. And George H.W. Bush, who said he was pro-life, we were always kind of suspicious of that, but I think ultimately he was, and supposedly wanted a pro-life judge, justice. No one was really sure how Souter would vote. He was up in 1990. Well, here it's 1992, and it was the Supreme Court decision, Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which, as you know, Sandy, right? I mean, this was a big case. I mean,
Let me just interject. Yeah. Bob Casey was the governor of Pennsylvania, then very strong pro-life Democrat. They used to have them,
right.
A very strong pro-life Democrat. And what they had done was they were challenging a lower court decision in Pennsylvania on the issue of abortion, and I think it was a way that the pro-life forces thought Roe versus Wade could be challenged in the Supreme Court and thrown out. And what they did end up throwing out was there was a provision in the Pennsylvania statute where husbands had to be notified if a wife was going to get an abortion. That was ultimately thrown out. But that's the kind of thing that was being discussed, and it was a moment when the whole world thought Roe versus Wade was going to be out the window. But, okay, so now back to your story, please.
Yeah, no, well done. And in fact, the way that the majority decision was written in favor of Planned Parenthood against Casey, and, yeah, I'm from Pennsylvania, so this was Senator Bob Casey. He was really the last great pro-life Democrat, you know, kind of an Irish Catholic, and, you know, kind of what Joe Biden maybe once was 40 or 50 years ago on the abortion issue. And the decision was 5-4, and the majority opinion was written by Justices Souter, David Souter, Anthony Kennedy, Sandra Day O'Connor. By the way, you know, all of these people appointed by pro-life Republicans, Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, you know, all of them disappointments. And this was the one where Kennedy wrote the infamous mystery clause, right? You know, saying that every individual has his or her own right to come up with their new meanings of meaning, right? Their own definitions of life, liberty, of existence. This is this horrible statement. But Souter was the crucial swing vote. You know, he could have stopped this, but he didn't. And Planned Parenthood v. Casey basically enshrined Roe as the law of the land. So the role of Joe Biden in this is absolutely crucial. Rudman said, you know, Biden is weeping tears of joy in the arms of Rudman. He's saying, you know, you were right about him, David Souter, right? You were right about him. And the crucial role of Biden was the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he shepherded David Souter through by a vote of 14-3. Now think about this. Amy Coney Barrett last week, if it was going through the Judiciary Committee, the vote was, I think, 12 Republicans, and every Democrat boycotted. They didn't just vote against her in committee. They boycotted, and they even put posters in the seats in protest. And then it goes out to the Senate floor, where the vote is 90-9 in favor of Souter. So this is the complete opposite of what happened with Clarence Thomas, what happened with Robert Bork, who were both pro-life nominees. And Rudman had ensured Biden and also Ted Kennedy, both of them. I'm telling you, I know this guy, Souter. He's going to be okay.
He's going to vote on a pro-choice. He's not going to do away with Roe versus Wade. In other words, whisper. He may be been appointed. You think maybe he's pro-life, but trust me, he's not going to vote to do away with Roe versus Wade.
That's right. And so Biden's like, oh, you're right, Warren. Jumping up and down, hugging there at the Amtrak station. And you know, these words haunt me from Rudman's memoirs. He said, Joe and I, we just kept laughing and yelling and hugging each other because sometimes there are happy endings, right? Sometimes there are happy endings. So this Joe Biden, and again, this is 1992. This is 30 years ago. This was when, you know, Biden's still a decade and a half after this, when he was vice president under Obama, is telling different people, Tom Brokaw, he's telling the Catholic bishops that he's reluctantly at best pro-choice, right? He's personally pro-life, but he thinks that a woman should have a right to choose. Now he's way off the rails. I mean, he reversed himself on the Hyde Amendment in the summer of 2019 under pressure from, in the primaries, from Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren. And now, of all things, not only is he opposing people like Amy Coney Barrett, but he seems to be, at least he's not denying it, in favor of packing the Supreme Court, of all things, with not only more David Souters, who's probably more moderate on some other issues, but they basically want to load it up with RBGs, Ruth Bader Ginsburg types. So, you know, so now, I mean, he wants to not only save Roe via a Planned Parenthood v. Casey type decision, but you know, far more than that, and who knows what sort of religious liberty decisions that he would do as well. So this moment with Joe Biden and David Souter and Planned Parenthood v. Casey, I know people don't know about this.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, this is really an important. And when Steve Ertelt, the editor of LifeNews.com, saw this piece, I published it at National Catholic Register because I thought Catholics in particular needed to know about this. He saw this and he reprinted it at LifeNews.com because even he who knows everything practically about abortion, I don't think he knew this story either. It's a really crucial moment.
You know what, Paul, let's talk for a second about the response that you just described, that this Rudman describes in his book about how they saw each other at a distance and they ran toward each other and they hugged and they embraced and they cried and they laughed. Now, okay, we're supposed to believe, I think we're supposed to believe that that's because men like that, and we'll say Joe Biden because he's the one we're concerned about right now, it's because they're so impassioned about women's rights. They are so vested in the well-being of women and their safety that they cried because they're so happy that that women can now get abortions because it's good for the women. I submit to you, Paul Kinger, that the reason these kinds of men are so happy is because abortions have bailed them out. Now, we don't know that. Mm-hmm. We don't know that, but I can't understand the passion and joy anything short of that. It's a personal thing to them.
Yeah, it'd be fair to say, I think probably certainly in the case of somebody like Ted Kennedy, who's the third person in this from the court, right? He was literally Biden's right-hand man, or maybe seated to the left of him in the Bork and Thomas hearings. And I mean, we know what he was like in his private life, his philandering. He's quite notorious for it. And I think there's something even deeper to it. In Kennedy's case, I actually know this pretty well. I've read a lot on it. You could read letters from Kennedy in the 1970s, Sandy, where he was very pro-life, like his brothers, RFK and JFK. He seemed to really flip by selling his soul on the issue when the Democratic Party moved left on it. And there's this famous letter that no one knows the contents of, where Ted Kennedy wrote to Pope Benedict right before he died. And people wonder what's in that letter. Some people think it might have involved Mary Jo Kopechne. Maybe his conscience wasn't clear because of that. I think, Sandy, it could have involved abortion, because you know the Kennedy family, they were faithful Irish Catholics on that issue. Even though J.F. Kennedy, like Ted, was a notorious philanderer. I mean, RFK wasn't, but JFK was. The father was. So, yeah, that's all quite possible in Kennedy's case. I don't know. In Kennedy's case, it could have been that he sold his soul simply to the abortion lobby to get their support, to the feminist movement.
But would
you
cry over that? But would you cry over that? Would you cry because you got the support of Planned Parenthood? I don't think so.
It's amazing. Yeah, Rudman talks in his memoirs that Souter, after all, was a compassionate human being. Mm-hmm. That's what he told Biden. So naturally, if he's a compassionate human being, why, he would support a woman's right to choose, which at that point, according to the Guttmacher Institute, was responsible for 25 to 30 million abortions of unborn babies in America, and now we're over 60 million. So the way the left sees this, right, this is an act of compassion to support Roe versus Wade. And, you know, and of course, it's anything but compassion to the unborn babies, and also, I've worked in the pro-life movement for years. My wife and I both have. And you know, there are so many women who went through abortions whose lives were just wrecked.
Yep, absolutely.
Because of that. They really regret the decision.
You know, the joy you describe reminds me very much of New York State. You know, when they passed that abortion law and Cuomo, Governor Cuomo signed it. And
right.
They celebrated. They lit the Capitol up. In pink, and they were just giddy. They were so happy because it was abortion for all 9 months, even the day before the birth, you could kill a baby, and they were thrilled about it. There's something so dark and insidious about this. Paul, where do Catholics stand on this issue? I know the official position of the church is that life is sacred, but how about the rank and file Catholics?
Yeah, it's a lot like the general, I guess, non-Catholic Protestant vote. I mean, it breaks down very simply by seriousness of the faith. And I tell this to everybody during every election time. It's the key question is not how did Catholics vote, because there's a gigantic number of Catholics who just self-identify as Catholic but don't attend Mass or maybe go once or twice a year. The more important question is, do you go to Mass weekly or more? And then when you break that down, you know, that vote was for Trump overwhelmingly in 2016. In fact, this is quite remarkable. The 2016 Catholic vote was 52-45 for Trump, which is quite amazing, because the Catholic vote usually mirrors the overall American vote because it's such a diverse group. But when you break that number down among people who go to Mass weekly or more, I think that was more like 60-35 in favor of Trump.
Wow.
And if you get like daily Mass goers, that's almost 70%. And it's a lot like with evangelicals, right? So evangelicals tend to be more serious than people maybe from the mainline denominations who don't really attend anymore. And that's why the evangelical vote and the kind of Mass going Catholic votes are usually almost identical. They're usually like 65-35 for the pro-life Republican.
But this
so
is
I think you'll see that again. Yeah.
This is an issue that Christians of all stripes must know about. And I have to also add, Paul, before I say goodbye to you here, that they need to know, and I've said this several times, but I will repeat, Kamala Harris, who will likely inherit the White House. That's just,
right.
I think, inevitable. Her own husband is saying he's the husband of the future president. Is the one who went after David Del Leiden, who revealed that Planned Parenthood was selling baby body parts. She went after him with a vengeance, did not go after Planned Parenthood. And so we know where she stands on this issue. Planned Parenthood is someone who's protected by her and supported her in every way. So this is where we're headed. It's a pretty clear choice, I think, Paul. And your article helps to kind of crystallize it. It's when Joe Biden saved Roe versus Wade. We'll put it on our Facebook page, and I hope that you'll read and share it with others. Paul, don't forget to read Paul's book, The Devil and Karl Marx, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Great interview, great book. Paul Kinger, thanks for joining me this morning. I'm Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
On Election Day, will we vote for biblical values? Our Constitution and the Bible values individual freedom and self-government. An all-powerful government that ignores God is dangerous. We're being told the lie that socialism is preferable to limited government and individual freedom. When we vote, will we choose a party that protects the biblical value of freedom, or will we choose a party that will take our freedom away? I'm Pastor John Miller. Visit me at churchontherock.org.
A prayer. Lord God, thank you for using American Family Radio to share your truth and love in this increasingly tumultuous time. Please don't let our love grow cold as we see wickedness increasing. Help us stand firm for you even to the end. Help us to preach the gospel of your kingdom to the whole world as a testimony. Help us to make the most of this platform you have given us to promote your name, the name of Jesus. Amen.
Faith, hope, love abide these three, but the greatest of these is love. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Karl Marx, an emissary of evil, and Charles Spurgeon, the prince of preachers, were evangelists of diametrically opposed messages. Yet they both lived in London at the same time. In fact, when asked the name of the person he most detested, Frederick Engels, Marx's cohort in chaos, responded unequivocally, Spurgeon. A generation later, George Bernard Shaw, a hardcore communist, seethed in hatred for William Booth and his Salvation Army of volunteers. Time and again, robust Christian witness has been the inoculant against the proliferation of Marxist poison in society.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The purpose of Moses' life was to bring the people of God into the land of promise. Yet in one critical moment, he failed to honor God as holy in the eyes of the people and forfeited the right to lead them into the land. Even at the end, Moses begged God to reverse his decision. I pleaded with the Lord at that time, please let me go over and see the good land. And the Lord said to me, enough from you. Do not speak to me of this matter again. God always answers prayer, but sometimes God's answer is a firm no. God may say the future I have for you is different than the one you pictured for yourself, and you must learn to accept that. To his credit, that is what Moses did. He didn't sulk, he didn't brood, and he didn't quit. He set aside the future he had in his mind and embraced the future God had in his mind. May we go and do likewise.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Deputy National Security Advisor Matthew Pottinger, who is arguably the U.S. government's most knowledgeable expert on the Chinese Communist Party, recently spoke in Mandarin to the people of China and others, threatened by what he calls the technologically enhanced totalitarianism of Xi Jinping's regime. Mr. Pottinger described, quote, the party's sheer ambition to wed traditional Leninist techniques with powerful new tools of digital surveillance, unquote, observing that even children are fair game under Beijing's rules of political warfare. As it happens, thanks to the CCP's collusion with Beijing's bankers on Wall Street, American investors are poised to pour tens of billions of dollars into Ant Technology Group, a Chinese conglomerate that enables Xi's ambitions. Fortunately, Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Marco Rubio introduced legislation yesterday that would end such U.S. underwriting of our Chinese communist enemies. Learn more at presentdangerchina.org. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
My wife, Jill, as you know, and Doug Emhoff, Kamala's wife are there. Kamala will be back later this week, I think on Friday.
So my wife, Jill, and Kamala's wife, Doug Emhoff, Oh, gosh. You know, I don't play a lot of the mistakes that Joe makes out on the trail because I don't really enjoy that. But you have to know that he's obviously impaired. And so he's out on the trail saying, you know, Kamala's wife, and he didn't even catch it, Doug Imhoff, Kamala's wife. Who knows? Maybe he has had a, in this day and age, he could be a woman and I missed it or something. He looked like a man, but who knows? All right, so, but that's not the serious part. That's serious. His ability to serve as president is certainly a serious topic. But I want to give you an idea of something that he said that of substance yesterday or in the past few days that is cause for concern. This is clip 9. Let's listen.
Which country is the biggest threat to America?
Well, I think the biggest threat to America right now in terms of breaking up our security and our alliances is Russia. Secondly, I think that the biggest competitor is China. And depending on how we handle that will determine whether we're competitors or we end up being in a more serious competition relating to force.
Let me just tell you right now that Russia has been on decline for decades now. I'm not saying they're not still a credible source of irritation, but Russia is not in good shape financially. They don't have the strong industry. They're not a danger to us in the way they once were, you know, decades ago. China is the threat. China is stealing our secrets. In many cases, those secrets have been handed to them. Our technological secrets. We have had these communist. I can't remember the name of the institutes that have been established at colleges and universities around the country. We've done whole shows on that because they've been trying to propagandize and control their own students. They are overwhelming us. They are building up their military, developing, courtesy of our technology, capabilities that challenge us. They have built a navy that rivals ours. I believe they even have more ships than we have right now. No. Vice President Joe Biden, the greatest threat to us is communist Red China. We know from writings and treatises by the military what they have in mind, and it is overtaking and conquering the United States. We know that they are inside some of the incitement right now on our streets. So that's a ridiculous statement, but there might be a reason why. Well, let me ask it. I'll put it in the form of a question. Could there be a reason why Joe Biden says that, oh, China's just a competition, but they're not our number one threat? Really? That's a very dangerous thing. We know now, a couple of things I want to share with you. We know now that Hunter Biden's business partner with China, CEFC, China Energy, paid Hunter Biden at least $5 million as part of an investment deal. We also know that his partner there, Patrick Ho, was charged with conspiracy to violate the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act and money laundering related to CEFC, China Energy, and contracts in Uganda and Chad. He's been in, I don't know if he still is in prison, but he certainly has spent prison time. A Senate released a report last month saying that an affiliate of CEFC wired $5 million to Biden's law firm from August 2017 through August 2018. We know that this is a company affiliated with Communist China. All right, with that as a backdrop, last night, Tony Bobulinski, who was Hunter's partner, was on Tucker Carlson. And you saw him, I hope, give a press conference just last week, before the last debate between President Trump and Joe Biden. And so Tony Bobulinski is his whole family, they are military people. And so he was motivated to come out and talk about what he knows about Hunter and also about Joe Biden because they accused him of spreading Russian disinformation. And he was so offended. In fact, he tried to get them to back off on that. He was furious. In fact, he said, my family has served this country. And he said, he's served this country. Let me just read what he says. I held a top secret clearance from NSA and the DOE. I served this country for 4 years in one of the most elite environments in the world, the Naval Nuclear Power Training Command. And to have a congressman out there, he's talking about Adam Schiff, speaking about Russian disinformation, or Joe Biden also publicly, at a public debate referencing Russian disinformation when he knows that Joe Biden himself sat face to face with me. I traveled around the world with his son and his brother. To say that and associate that with my name is absolutely disgusting to me. He said he wanted the Bidens to tell the truth, but they refused to do so. And that's why he came forward and did his press conference, turned over phones, email, all kinds of things, publicly accusing me of treason, treating me like I'm insignificant for the 50 years of history that my family served this country is insignificant. And that's why I'm sitting here. I assure you, this is the last place I want to be right now. I was hoping the Bidens would do the right thing or that Schiff would retract his statement, but I could not allow another minute or hour or day of my family's name to be associated or muddied up around Russian disinformation. He says he's non-political, but that was the part that really motivated him. Okay, so I want you to hear what he had to say, at least in part, with Tucker last night, because if you saw his statement, that was something. But this is even more detail. Let's listen to Tony Bobulinski, partner in business with this Chinese firm I just mentioned, and Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. Let's listen.
So you can imagine what I've been through over the last couple months, and knowing all this to be fact, and watching Joe Biden and his family and their lawyers trout around the world stating that there was no involvement, or even at the debate, Joe Biden referenced that you've seen my tax returns and there's no money from foreign, you know, enterprises in that. I want to simplify this for the American people as much as I can. On May 13th, that email was sent from James Gilyard to me. I didn't generate that email. James Gilyard generated that email. And in that email, James Gilyard goes through intimate detail of what each individual's requests were from a compensation perspective and how the equity in the enterprise would be divvied up. Very important. May 13th, that email was generated by somebody else to me. In that email, there's a statement where they go through the equity. Jim Biden's referenced as, you know, 10%. Doesn't say Biden, it says Jim. And then it has 10% for the big guy held by H. I 1,000% sit here and know that the big guy is referencing Joe Biden. That's crystal clear to me because I lived it. I met with the former vice president in person multiple times, and I had been meeting and talking with Hunter Biden and Jim Biden and Rob Walker and James Gilyard. Where the media has tried to hide, and I personally feel it's disgusting, is between that May 13th email and the final document that was executed called Oneida Holdings LLC. In Oneida Holdings LLC, the equity is broken up 20% Hunter Biden, 20% Jim Biden. Well, they're LLCs that represented them.
Right.
20% James Gilyard, 20% Rob Walker, and 20% me and my investment entity. What I'd ask the American people to read and look at is how from May 13th to the final Oneida document that got executed, did Jim Biden go from a 10% owner to a 20% owner? That's not my question to answer. I'm sure there were discussions within the Biden family. I wasn't privy to that discussion. But this is Jim Biden, the brother of the potential future president of the United States. It's not a distant cousin. It's not an employee. It's his brother, who in documents defines himself as a political advisor to his brother. And so I'll leave that to the American people to answer that.
So basically what he's saying, Jim Biden, the brother, has been, the part that we didn't include here, has been handling Joe Biden's reelection, handling his money, all of this. He presents himself as an agent for his brother. And he suddenly took 20%. And so that's what Tony is saying. Where's that money going? The inference is Joe Biden, yes, on his tax returns, it may not show it, but that's because he's taking a cut. Somebody is getting this money on his behalf. And that's why he's listed as the big guy. But the big guy, it's not going into the big guy's bank account. It's going into like his brother's. That's the inference on that. All right. So Tony goes on. He has a lot more to say. He talks about how he met with Biden. He described several times. He describes one of the meetings. He talks about how his inference is that Joe Biden was actually orchestrating all this, got his son in place to be on these on the boards of these organizations as the middleman, and that the family has been making out big time. They've made billions, millions at least, millions at least. I need to be sure I'm accurate on that. And so I want you to hear the rest of what Tony had to say, at least a part of it. Let's listen.
I don't understand how the American journalist is allowing that gap to be even talked about and defined.
So, and I should say, and I want to put the document on the screen, in his pitch to the Chinese, in his bio, Jim Biden describes himself as an advisor, a current advisor to his brother. So was it clear to you from the beginning that what Jim Biden was bringing to this deal was his relationship with Joe Biden?
Yeah, 1,000%, crystal clear. After I met with Joe Biden the morning of May 3rd at the Milken Conference and then was taken backstage after Joe had spoken, you know, we joked around for about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then I walked him out to his car. I think he was, I think they referenced he was off to see the lieutenant governor.
This is Joe Biden.
Joe Biden, yes. Yeah. And then after that, I went over to the Peninsula Hotel and I sat with Jim Biden for 2 hours, where Jim Biden walked through his history and his own words, stating all the work and effort he did to get Joe Biden elected initially in Delaware, and then through the family history and the role that he had played in it. And in that meeting, remember, I'm the son of a naval officer. I was a naval officer myself. And because I held a Q clearance, which is the equivalent of a top secret clearance, we're audited every year. So if you receive a gift, I think the barrier was $25. Anything larger than $25, we had to disclose it to the government, because obviously anybody with the clearance, the government is watching closely that they're not influenced by the Russians, the Iranians, the Chinese, and stuff like that. So as I was listening to Jim walk through this, I have a big heart. If you talk to anybody who knows me, they would weigh in on that. I'm a kind person. And I'm thinking about the Biden family, like, how are they doing this? I know Joe decided not to run in 2016, but what if he ran in the future? Aren't they taking political risk or headline risk? And I remember looking at Jim Biden and saying, how are you guys getting away with this? Like, aren't you concerned? And he looked at me and he laughed a little bit and said, plausible deniability.
He said that out loud?
Yes. He said it directly to me, one-on-one in a cabana at the Peninsula Hotel after about a, you know, hour and a half, two-hour meeting, with me asking out of concern, how are you guys doing this? Aren't you concerned that you're going to put your brother's, you know, future presidential campaign at risk? You know, the Chinese, the stuff that you guys have been doing already in 2015 and 2016 around the world. And I just can almost picture his face where he sort of chuckles and says, you know, plausible deniability.
So he said, this is a man who's been drafting off his brother's political career for almost 50 years. He said to your face, essentially, we're lying about it.
Anyone watching this interview can look up what plausible deniability means, and the definition is very distinct.
All right, so that's Tony Bobulinski with Tucker Carlson. By the way, you can see the whole thing. We'll put that on our Facebook page so you can watch the entire exchange. You should, and you should share it if you know anyone who's on the fence. Let me just say, excuse me, what this means is that the man who wants to be president of the United States, What Tony is accusing him of is being the front man, the brains behind. Well, I guess that's a good thing that Joe has the wherewithal to do this, but that he's put his son in positions where his son has made, he was making $185,000 a month just for Burisma, being on the board of Burisma, the energy company. That's Hunter. And Hunter is in the email that we, on his laptop, one of the emails says he's talking to his children. He said, well, at least I don't ask you to give me half of everything you make. So you think about that. And remember that the media is choosing not to tell this story. They've blocked it out. They've made it almost impossible for people to hear. And nevertheless, a poll I just gave you yesterday, 54% of likely voters say that they believe this story. I don't know how they've heard this story, but they believe this story. Remember that President Trump was impeached because, allegedly, when he, on this phone call, we had the transcript, we had everything about what he said to the president of Ukraine, and he was asking him simply to look into this scandal, this potential scandal with Hunter Biden and Burisma. That's what he asked him to do, and he was impeached for that. This is just so twisted, but you need to know. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.